This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 31st of May, 2021 for the U.S. Out there. It is Memorial Day holiday, so markets will be closed there. But we had last week just a very, very quiet week. Volatility, as we discussed in our internal call, Peter, continuing to go lower. And, you know, where are we in terms of this sort of comeback rally we've seen? Well, it's difficult to say, but we're still in the shadow of the prior big sell-off if you look at, if you look at any index, but the NASDAQ 100 in particular, because the steepness of that prior sell-off was quite large. Despite a really high PCE print, and I've just, you know, for perspective, if you haven't had a look at that, I've got it in today's slide deck on slide five, where it's not just that year-on-year figure popping up to above 3% for the first time since the early 1990s. And that, you know, makes some sense given the year-on-year. This is, of course, the maximum year-on-year comparative baseline effect from post-pandemic situation last April. But if you look at the month-on-month at 0.7%, that has nothing to do with last April. And that is the highest level if you take out that crazy back and forth over the September and October 2001, obviously linked to the terrorist attacks there. That's the highest level since the early 1980s. So really a huge sort of a prod to the market, but not getting much of a reaction, not in equities, not in treasuries, where the yields actually ended slightly lower on the day. It really speaks to how uncertain people are on, you know, we know we've had sort of a maximum stimulus input here. We're peaking out in a lot of these data. Will it continue to rise from here, or are we going to get some temporary peak and a quick slope off into the fall? Doesn't feel like the market is convinced on what it wants to do next. Peter, what's your take on the equity market here? What are we waiting for? We're very low volatility levels.
Well, I think that given the PCE deflator and what you just said, John, I think that at least inside the equity market, I think the overwhelming majority of investors, they agree that they see inflation, but I think they are also mostly in the camp of this being transitory. That is my take, given the pricing, the VIX coming down, everything we're seeing, I think, points to that is the group, that's the narrative that is in control. Whether that will stay in control, we'll see. I think we'll be much wiser. But I think it will probably take an extraordinarily long time of data points to convince enough people on the margin that this is a totally new inflation machine. Because of all the companies that are saying, oh, we have these bottlenecks, all the transitory inflationistas type of people that will constantly saying, well, there we have the bottlenecks. We'll have to wait a little bit longer. So I think the probabilities that we are in a more permanent inflationary environment will be updated very slowly. On slide three, I've just put in the big winners in May were India and our commodity baskets. A comeback to China's consumer and technology sector. The rest of our equity themes are not really something to speak home about, and maybe except for crypto, which was really, you know, being slaughtered there. And then, you know, value versus growth is doing well. And I've put in on slide three on the just your Eurostock 50, as you can see, it's very smooth, very little volatility intraday right now. And the trajectory is still up. Europe is benefiting from low valuations and a higher beta to the cyclical part of the economy and inflation. And on slide four, EM equities. Back in the previous inflationary period we had in 16, 17 and the early parts of 18, EM equities did actually quite well. They do that on the commodity prices side as well. Obviously, there's an impact on households in the emerging markets, but on the equity side, those two things are often not the same. They're benefiting tremendously from that. So I think we have hit the bottom for now in EM, and we will see EM equities continue to do much better over the coming months. I could be horribly wrong, but that's for now is my view, at least.
Yeah, and a key input here for that inflationary outlook, of course, will be underlying commodity prices. We've seen a pause in places. We still have oil towards the highs of the range. Ola, what's your take on how we're wrapping up May here in the commodity space?
Well, May was a bit of a mixed month, but generally one where we, at least during the belly part of the month, had a bit of a correction led by these announcement by Chinese authorities to clamp down on commodity speculation and commodity hoarding. The impact has been primarily on some of the China-centric commodities, steel and iron ore, but both of these are now have started to recover already. So we're seeing a correction, and we also saw that in the last cut report covering the week last Tuesday, that basically caught the back end of that correction. You can see that on slide 8. You can see all the changes, most of them are in red. So it's a broad reduction led by grains and copper. And that we had the odd buys in there. That was primarily WTI crude at the expense of Brent. And we also had the buying in gold, which was primarily driven by short covering. But generally, you can see as well on slide 8, the net long across the space is still very elevated. And looking at the structure on slide 9, this is basically just taking the 1 year roll yields. We can see that even though we've had a small correction there, we're still generally got a positive roll yield across the commodities. And a positive roll yield, that basically attracts increased investment demand because you have a positive carry of being long some of these commodities. And you can see on the insert there on slide 9 as well, which commodities are currently having the biggest backwardation, i.e. the biggest roll yield. So something like crude oil, you can see recently has started to pick up as well. You get an annual return of more than around 6-7% for holding a passive long position in crude oil. And crude oil, I think, is going to be probably one of the key markets this week. We got the OPEC Plus meeting tomorrow. They are expected to ratify their already agreed decision to continue to increase production. And then I believe it's in Vienna, the Iran nuclear negotiations will enter probably what is going to be its final phase. So we may see an agreement there, which could see increased production from Iran over the coming months. But you just mentioned, John, it's Memorial Day in the US. It is the beginning of the driving season. Driving mobility has picked up very strong in the US. Gasoline inventories are at the lowest in 30 years. Cushing inventories are also at well below the average for this time of year. So that's really where the bid is coming in the market right now. It's WTI driving the recovery. And if I should just finish off with gold before we move on to the next. Gold has seen a pickup in demand from both hedge funds and ETF investors. But as you can see on slide 10, the pickup so far has been relatively benign, not that aggressive, even though we're trading at these levels. It could indicate that some of the underlying bid we're seeing in the market continues to come from these so-called long-term trends, super tankers, which really takes weeks to turn around their positions. They've been constantly supplying a bid into the market. That's probably also the explanation why we just had a short-lived attempt to correct on Friday, and we're still above 1900. Key focus this week, 1923, a break above that level, and the market will start to speculate about return to the August high.
All right. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see in the U.S. Also, with the demand you indicated for motor gasoline for driving, together with the fact that, of course, shale production has not reached back to where it was pre-pandemic. So, and especially with those low supply figures going into driving season, very interesting to watch.
And probably won't will for the foreseeable future. Even next year, at current prices, the EIA is still expecting production only will average around 11.8 million barrels. That's still below the 13 that we peaked at back in 2019. So a very slow recovery in U.S. shale obviously leaves more room for the rest of the group, especially the OPEC Plus group.
Yeah. All right. Looking over at FX, we have a very weak impulses in most major currencies. The places where we are seeing something picking up here, we still have the ongoing story of the yen weakness. I, as I've just covered a couple of times, I'm really beginning to scratch my head even more profoundly than before because of the real rate situation, which is far more supportive of the yen than of the U.S. dollar. When you have inflation still running basically flat to non-existent in Japan, and you're getting increasingly negative real rates if this U.S. Inflation pickup has any sort of, if it's sustained to any significant degree. But the biggest thing that's been going on over the last week has been a pickup in the Chinese renminbi, which has showed isolated strength. In the sort of prior cycles, it's often been sort of passive to the broader market, maybe a sort of a low beta moves relative to the U.S. dollar. But we're seeing isolated renminbi strength, which is interesting. I think part of that is the commodity input story. They want to make sure that that those commodity price rises are to a degree dampened with a bit of an offset on the currency strength side. But the move apparently getting aggressive enough to get a bit of a pushback from authorities. We saw a weaker than expected fix overnight for the CNY. And we also saw the PBOC and regulators pushing back against the pace of the move. But that's the most interesting thing going on. As you can see on slide six, where you see that the strongest currency, not looking at gold, is the renminbi here. And just briefly, to follow up on that, on slide seven, this is the official weekly, it's only a data point that's put out weekly, the official CNY basket that is tracked by the PBOC. And you can see that it is at a very notable level towards 98. That was the high from early 2018. And you can see that prior sort of high that was touched three times before we broke high around 96, that was a key level on the way up. So this is really important, a really important area for the broader look at the Chinese renminbi. And if we look at what we're looking at next in markets, we've talked about a very low VIX. We've talked a lot about recently this incredible liquidity provision from the Fed and the kind of distortions it's been creating in this reverse repo facility, ridiculously compressed credit spreads. And Peter, you've put up this, the Goldman Sachs Financial Conditions Index on slide 11, just showing where we are in a very long-term prospect here going back to prior to 2000.
Yeah, so the reason why we bring in this up is that I mentioned it on our internal call that I think the low VIX level that we are getting, which is beginning to look a lot like what we had back in the years before the pandemic, and these very extraordinary financial conditions you talked about and we have talked about for a couple of weeks now on the podcast, I think is a sweet spot for investors to actually buy some optionality on long volatility, because I think in the inflation question, permanent versus transitory, is the defining question for equities and markets more broadly over the next 12 months. And I think the market right now is offering you a golden opportunity to buy much more cheaply this optionality than just 6 months ago. And I know the narrative is still that this is mostly transitory, but I still feel that we are in a good place with our view that this is probably a more permanent than what the market is currently priced in. So if we are right about that, John, I think you have a great opportunity right now.
And to follow up on that, the key factor relative to that transitory or not story is what the Fed does about it. There's the taper discussion is getting a bit more prominent. If you look at the rate expectations, they haven't really gone anywhere. So the rate expectations look a little bit complacent. But we've seen a little bit of taper talk from Clarida, so this June meeting could be in play, just providing the most modest of hints, even if a bigger hint is not provided until Jackson Hole. So it does look like this next sort of 3 to 6 month period could be really critical for this whole issue. And is the market too complacent on the Fed's stance here?
And then one big major trend that is happening in our society right now is the green transformation. And I think people and policymakers, but specifically investors, are overlooking the huge tail risk of doing the green transformation. So we all like clean air. We like the prospects and the future of it. But the path towards that future could be very, very bumpy, and it could come with the inflation. Very expensive. We've talked about the urbanization of China and India underpinning inflation and commodity demand, but then the whole green transformation is a totally different ballpark. As I mentioned on the internal call, you have this new carbon taxing scheme in Germany that was started in early January, where you pay 25 euros per ton of carbon on diesel, petrols, etc. So consumers are now paying at the pump for emitting carbon, and the EU Commission is looking to widen this scheme out to all countries in the EU. And you're already having the South in Europe now talking about what is called energy poverty, that the green transformation could actually catapult countries and large swaths of the population into poverty. So. And I think that will fit with more tariffs on imported goods from polluting areas, so you can onshore jobs. But also, it's almost guaranteed that if we do the green transformation, you will have a massive skewness in the future in our tax system on the very, very rich and the very wealthiest of our companies will have to pay a larger share. And I think you have to begin contemplating this this journey if you're a long-term investor.
But let's not forget the proximate cause, for example, of the Yellow Vest movement, if I'm not mistaken, back in 2018, was a hike on the diesel tax. So at a populist level, these kinds of things, and especially in the US where the this sort of, you know, price of gasoline is just such a something that people are so aware of. You know, if it goes beyond, I would argue, look at the charts and look at the reaction last time around this $4 a gallon area. It's going to take a lot more, a bigger rise in crude oil to get there. But that would be a level where it becomes a huge, there's a huge pushback against this green transformation and a political risk for the Democrats, I would argue, if that does come about. But that's getting a bit big picture here. We've still got some earnings. This is pretty quiet season for earnings. But you have your overview here on slide 12. Anything we need to look out for in the coming day or two?
I wanted to dwell on the big things because I don't going to say much on earnings. There is none to speak of today, and we'll have plenty of time tomorrow to talk about Zoom and Lululemon. So we'll take that tomorrow. Let's just keep this short today, if we can.
What are you saying? Do we not entertain? And speaking of quiet, fairly quiet on the calendar, though, we do have a couple things we need to look at here. It gets more interesting in the Asian session. We do have a German CPI. Interesting to contrast that with where we are with the U.S. CPI. Of course, the risk here, if the U.S. is over stimulating, is you have far more negative rates in the U.S., that should be a support for the euro as long as these inflation figures are relatively tame in comparison. But let's look at the Asian session. So a couple of things I want to pick out there. The South Korean exports, imports, always interesting as an indicator on an open economy out there most exposed to China. Australian building approvals, and then in China, the Caixin manufacturing PMI. And then an Australian RBA meeting, really expectations low coming here, but the market's quite trigger happy on these meetings because we've had the Bank of Canada doing its tapering move. We saw the RBNZ shifting sort of pulling forward its indication on when a rate hike could be in play. So they've identified the July meeting as the important one for making this decision on their yield curve control policy. But any hint that sort of suggests something leading towards that could be interesting. I still don't expect much. Then they seem very intent on staying quiet. We've seen some of the key commodity prices coming down, although they have bounced back a little bit. Though they're not satisfied with where wages are, they've just seen a fresh little COVID outbreak in Melbourne, et cetera. So I think this one's, you know, just be aware of it, but I think we'll see where we are tomorrow. And then just to highlight briefly that the three big things out of the U.S. this week are the ISM manufacturing tomorrow, and then Thursday, the services, very interesting there after that crazy number for the April cycle, and the non-farm payrolls change, where I think that's interesting as well. You know, the interesting thing there could be that we see a somewhat sluggish rise in payrolls because of the people the people are still on these benefits and not coming back into the market, even though there's obvious very strong demand for the labor. The payrolls may not necessarily rise as quickly as one might have expected previously, and we'll be looking for any further signals from Fed speakers. A couple are up tomorrow: Quarles and Brainard. That's a wrap for today, and we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.